All right, thank you. All right, so this elective is going to build on the one that we just did. I'm going to assume the things that we just covered. If you weren't in the room for the first one, you don't have to leave, but it might be a bit tricky to follow what's going on. All right, we've been looking at this diagram, and so far we've covered partnership, valuable contribution, having a voice being heard, personal relationship, and all those skills and character of the senior pastor down the bottom. In this elective, we're going to look at two more bits. So you'll see in the background there, complementarian convictions. It's in the background, and you probably can't see the light green check that's everywhere, because it's everywhere, complementarian convictions. It's just all over the thing. And then we'll cover relationship with the teams. What we're not going to spend much time on is that grey box contextual awareness, just basically in the middle of the diagram, or a little bit south of the middle. Let me say a couple of things about it now, but we're not going to give it much time. The idea there is that this senior pastor's skills are applied, for better or worse, through his awareness of the associate's context. So in other words, the senior pastor will do a better job of applying his skills to help an associate whose role is children's ministry if he has a bit of an awareness of children's ministry. Or to the women's worker if he has a bit of an awareness of the role of the women's worker. That doesn't mean he has to have been a children's worker. He's unlikely to have been a women's worker. But you can gain that kind of understanding by listening, by asking questions, by dropping in from time to time. The better you understand the particular stressors of a ministry, the more able you are to help somebody in that ministry. So that's all that box is about, is it's worth developing a bit of contextual awareness. Good, that'll do. Let's talk about complementarianism. I think I've said a bit that I don't think the results were heavily gendered. Gender itself was not a theme in the study. So men and women, I've given you two quotes where women felt that they weren't heard because they were women. But apart from that, the women did not mention gender very much at all. But complementarianism did come out as a theme, which is obviously related to gender, but a little bit different. So looking at the diagram, one of our big building blocks is making a valuable contribution. Exactly what that contribution is clearly going to be affected by complementarianism. When it comes to having a voice, if we adopt a really highly structured complementarianism, where you have your all-male elders meeting, and that's where most decisions are made, well, then that's going to have implications for having a voice. And complementarianism is even a factor when it comes to the senior pastor's skills. So I think I said this in answer to one of the questions before. If a senior pastor's not particularly good at strategy, a male associate might feel like he can step into that gap, whereas in a complementarian setting, a female associate probably won't feel like that's appropriate. And so the results for each of them are a little bit different. So complementarianism is sort of playing out in the background everywhere. Let me tell you what I think our goal is as complementarians, which feels fraught, but we'll have a go anyway. If you don't share these assumptions, though, and this is why I'm giving them to you, if you don't share in some of these assumptions, you'll need to translate what I say a little bit to be more helpful for your context. All right, here's the first one. We want men and women to work together in ways that involve genuine complementarity. I think that's one of our assumptions. So we actually want men and women working together, and we want some sort of genuine complementarity. One of the interviewing participants, she wasn't at the church that we'd been talking about. She was now at a 5M church, and all of the M's were covered by men. There weren't women anywhere in the structure. And what she said was, it's not complementarian if there's not a woman. I think that's right. Now, that doesn't mean that the woman has to be employed, but if there's not a woman somewhere in the picture, I don't think we can call ourselves complementarian, can we? Right? If you're complementarian, you have to have the bits that complement each other. And if you've only got one, then you need another word. So I think there are places in the world where what is called complementarianism is actually exclusivism. Men do everything, women aren't necessary. I hope that's not us. If we're complementarian and we want men and women to work together. My next assumption is we want to preserve male leadership. After that, we want men and women to make valuable contributions. And I think we want male and female voices in decision making. And what I want to distinguish here is influence from authority. So there's a difference between having influence and having authority, between having a voice and having authority. Being heard is not the same as having authority. And so I think we can have male and female voices in decision making without that compromising male leadership. That's what I think the goal is. You can run after me with a pitchfork later if you need to. All right, so that raises a range of questions for us. The first one, what should women do or not do? I feel like we spent 30 or 40 years talking about that. That feels like the first book, and we wrote that first book about 300 times, and we're just moving on to the second book. What do we do once we assume that? The next question, do we work separately? So you've got the women's ministry silo, or do we work together? So at this conference in 2019, Cara Hartley over there noted that there'd been a shift away from the silo approach towards men and women working together in kind of the same areas. And Cara called that healthy, and I think that's right. I wouldn't have named you if I disagreed, Cara. It is healthy, but it is more complex, isn't it? Like, it just requires much greater organisation. It's more difficult to do. So healthy but complex. Another issue it raises for us is, what does the organisational chart look like? Right, what do we call people? How does it all fit together? That's a complexity. Who should be in the room when decisions get made? What do we do when the staff team's too big for one meeting? We'll come to that when we look at teams. How does lay eldership fit alongside the staff team? So if you're Anglican, you've got parish council. If you're Presbyterian or some independent churches, you've got elders, you've got elders and deacons perhaps. This is beyond my brief. This is another one of those things we need more study of. I don't think we've done enough thinking about how the staff team and the lay leadership fit together. There's an author who talks about the danger of setting up a bicameral system. So you've got two groups and they each kind of have authority, but there's no mechanism for working out how they relate to each other. That's one danger. Another danger is that the staff just swamp the lay leaders. The danger on the other side is that the lay leaders make decisions that they don't have to carry out and they stifle the staff team. I don't have a solution, but we need to work out how our lay leadership and our staff teams fit together. So into that framework of the goals and the issues that come up, let me give you some data from the study. Here's a table that shows the percentage of the interview that was coded to complementarianism. So what you do with a qualitative study is you go through and you highlight bits and you code. Something can be coded to more than one theme. So in the top there, women's workers and associate pastors talked about complementarianism. One of them, not at all. And then one of them, it was 33% of the interview, right? So they talked about it that much. You can see it came up in most of them. Children's workers, a bit less. That's not in order of participant, that's just in ascending order. But it's a bigger issue, I think, for women's workers, associate pastors, than for children's workers. We're going to do this by story. So I want to tell you about the three women who had the biggest kind of concerns around, most significant issues around complementarianism. The first one is participant 11. She's the 33% in the box. And we met her in the last session. She's the one who was never asked to do anything in particular. Her problem is that she's got too much freedom, and she's worried about that in a complementarian way. So let me read from her. I've always felt that I was respected and appreciated, but I would have loved to have felt like I was part of a team that was clear where we were going. I don't want to be the driver, but I would love my thinking and ideas to be part of something bigger. But yeah, I found it a bit hard when that wasn't there. Can you give me any concrete examples of issues in particular or whatever? So an example would be exploring the idea of one-to-one Bible reading, discipleship, that sort of thing. And I reckon this would be really important and wanting to start that and began to start that amongst the women, but also wanting to make sure that change wasn't driven by women in the church without consideration of the leadership that God has put in place. I think it got to the point where I sometimes felt that I was taking the place of the elders and I wasn't comfortable with that in terms of discussing church stuff. There were times when I thought, I'm happy to be part of this discussion, but I'm not the person to make the final decision with the pastor. And so there would be times when I'd say, I think you need to talk about this with the elders. Interviewer, that's me. So you didn't discuss the shape of complementarian practice before you started? No, no. That's an error, just for that person who asked about interview questions before. No, which I think is probably stuff that I would discuss now. Like the specific way, you know, tell me how do the leaders lead? How do I fit with this? Yeah, who are the people who are actually leading me? In what ways do I complement? I think that's the thing, wanting to complement, but not entirely sure what it is that I'm complementing. Right? So she's worried that she's got too much influence. That's her concern. The blokes aren't leading. It's not clear to her what she's complementing. She's just been given such a free slate that she could do anything. And she's worried that she's not submitting to male authority. In terms of the goals, the issue that's under threat here is the preservation of male leadership. That's the one that she's worried about. And this is a good example of one of those places where a male associate might respond differently. So I think it's particularly, she doesn't want the women to be leading change in the church. I think a bloke would feel less concerned probably about doing that. So that's one issue on one side. On the other side, there's the issue of not enough influence. So in the language of this morning, that's having no voice. And that's participant 10. Again, we heard from her earlier. So she's the one who wasn't heard because she was a woman. But now she talks a little bit about structures and the way structures got in the road of voice. So I'll read this one. I mean, it was a church where it was an all-male eldership. Female leaders were not, like, they didn't even talk to their wives about things from elders' meetings. So they never got any female input into anything. And that's one of the hard things too. The elders, they're there to support the senior pastor. That's what their job is. As an aside, that is not the job of elders. Like, if you have plural elders, like, the senior pastor needs friends, but that's not the job of elders. So if that's how that's been set up, I think that's an error. That's what their job is. As an associate pastor and as a female, there was nobody there for me, nobody to turn to. My question, are there things that the senior pastor could have done or that the elders could have done, that anyone could have done that might have made it better? Or that you wanted them to do and they didn't? One is change the actual structure. So I just think the structure is wrong. I think having female elders would have helped because there would have been someone who could have gone, hey, has anyone stopped to think about how the participant might be feeling about this? Or has anyone checked in on how she's going with all this stuff that's happening in our church at the moment? Or, she laughs a bit. My question, I assume it was a theological decision not to have female elders, but was there a way they could have had a voice within their theological understanding, or was it not a theological conviction to have all male elders? So introducing a second layer of leadership like that, perhaps, or even just inviting me as the only woman on staff to elders' meetings regularly so that I had a chance to speak to them about what I'm doing. Even if you can't vote, oh yeah, not even to vote, but just to present to them what I'm doing so they were hearing what I was doing from me. So a couple of things to see there. The most important for our purposes is there's no female voice anywhere. She's not looking for decision-making authority. She just wants to be heard in the context of decisions being made. She wants some kind of female voice. So in terms of our goals for complementarianism, the issue here is that women are excluded from decision-making. And so it's not complementary anymore. The blokes are doing it alone. The third scenario is also about not having enough voice, but this time, instead of it being a deliberate kind of theological decision, it was kind of a structural oops. So we heard about this participant this morning, participant 5. She's one of these people who was in a situation, the staff team's just too big. And so they split into 2 layers of meetings, and when it was implemented, she was excluded from the top layer. Now, this happened in a couple of places. One way that this happens is we go, oh, it's too big, so the top meeting will be the congregational pastors. So what's just happened? They're all blokes. The other situation where it can happen is we'll just take all the 5Ms, and in some places the 5M pastors are all blokes. So it sounds simple, it's kind of convenient, it's neat, but what you end up with is all male meetings kind of by accident, not by conviction that there shouldn't be women in the room. So it's neat, it's simple, but in the end, for participant five, her job's untenable because decisions are being made about her job without any input from her. Now, the solution is complicated, and I'm going to chat about this a bit more. It'll depend a little bit on your model of church government, what I'm going to say here. But I want to suggest a little bit tentatively, although not very tentatively, that if we rely purely on a structural solution to preserve male leadership, then the goal that we're going to sacrifice is complementarity. Why don't I say it again? If we rely structurally, we rely solely on a structural solution for the preservation of male leadership, the goal that we will sacrifice is complementarity. And the strain on our relationships then is going to be felt in that having a voice building block of partnership. I want to demonstrate with reference to a couple of American authors, and it's worth saying before I do that Australian and American complementarianism are not the same, but I think it illustrates the problem. So independently, two American authors, Alex Duke and Jonathan Lehman, argue that all roles within churches should be made to fit the biblical categories of elder or deacon, right? If there's a job, it's an elder's job or it's a deacon's job. I'm going to give you a definition of elders and deacons that I've nicked from the New South Wales Presbyterians, but I don't think it's particularly controversial. All right, so this is an elder. Teams of shepherds, elders, work together under Christ's authority to lead the church in its crucial role in God's mission. This shepherding involves 1, leading the church in its life and mission, 2, praying with and for God's people, 3, proclaiming the gospel, teaching the whole counsel of God from the scriptures, and refuting those who oppose it, and 4, modelling life in Christ by setting an example of the Christian life of faith and repentance. All right, let me give you a second to have a look at that definition. So that's elders. Lock that in. You know, have in your mind what sort of person that is. Let's go to the next one. Particular churches will also normally be cared for by a team of servants, deacons, who manage the practical and material needs of the church, with particular concern for the needs of the vulnerable, the weak, and the poor. The goal of this servant work is to facilitate the proclamation of the gospel and the teaching of God's word, to effectively manage the church's resources, and to demonstrate God's love and bear witness to Christ in practical ways. All right, now I think Duke and Lehman would be happy with that definition of elders and deacons. I think when most people think elders and deacons, that's kind of what they're thinking. So here's my question. If eldership is male, which not all complementarians would say, but it would be a common position. If eldership is male, where does the woman whose role is to teach women, model godliness among women, and pray for women fit? Where does the children's worker, whose role is to do that among children, fit? They don't really fit, do they? Because what they do fits more in that definition we had of elders, but they're not doing it for the whole church. They're not really doing what that definition of deacons is, she says, standing in an Anglican college. I understand that the Anglicans use the word deacon differently, and you'll have to work out what's going on there. I didn't mean it like that, so that's an interesting response. But the point is that women who are appropriately exercising word-based leadership can't be called elders or deacons if we use this kind of traditional definition of an elder or a deacon. And so then if we take the next step in this two-lane model where everyone's an elder or a deacon and we say that the important decision-making all happens in elders' meetings, then A, we've excluded women because they're not elders, and we end up with decision-making that's not complementary, there's no complementarity in it, and we're missing people who actually have the role of doing this job. We're missing people who are genuinely in leadership roles while we're discussing the leadership of the church. In other words, we're missing a voice that we need. And so I'm not convinced that structural solutions to the preservation of male leadership are going to lead to healthy complementarian ministries. Some roles obviously should be male only, right? So, you know, we want men to be senior pastors, but we don't want to rely, I don't think, on structural solutions to do all the heavy lifting. What's the alternative? The alternative is a relational solution, I think. And most of the time, our complementarianism does play out relationally. We relate to one another, and when we do that, we do it as men and women. And so we relate in the recognition in a group that someone in particular is the senior pastor and the rest of us are not senior pastors. And some of us are men and some of us are women. That's how complementarianism works itself out in marriage, isn't it? It works itself out relationally. Let me give you some advice. So Gavin Peacock gives this advice to husbands. I don't think it's particularly controversial. Make decisions, but discuss all things with her. She is your greatest counsellor, equal to you, but created by God for you to lead. Her wisdom is priceless, as she knows you better than anyone else. Of course we encourage husbands, when they make decisions, to talk to their wives, right? I suspect none of us would say, well, you're the head of the household, so go and sit alone and work it all out and don't talk to your wife about it. But if we don't include women in decision-making, that's what we're doing in churches, isn't it? It's the equivalent of doing that. So it's not problematic for our complementarian understanding of marriage. I don't think it's problematic for an understanding of complementarianism in the church. We want to bring a relational understanding of complementarianism. What does that look like? I think we kind of intuitively know what it looks like. It means you're in a meeting and you talk and you have ideas and you discuss things and you sense the room and you can feel that the blokes are heading in a direction and the women just sort of pull out. They know how to submit and still be in the room. If I can say this perhaps a little bit too directly to the fellas, the women trust you to lead. Perhaps it's time we trust the women to be in the room and submit. I think they can do that. The women in my study are all personally committed to complementarianism. They want to submit to male leadership and they can do that and be in the room. All right, three more things on complementarianism. The first one, to some extent, fits in that contextual awareness category, so it's just helpful to identify, but I'll give you a quote. The context here is a senior pastor who frequently cancels meetings or doesn't show up for their one-to-one meeting. So let me read that. He's like, you know, it'll happen when it happens. The other guys don't complain when I don't get to meet with them. Yes, but there's a difference between they have singular responsibilities for stuff that they're doing in a way that I don't, and that rightly I don't, because I report to you or to them on different things. But he just didn't seem to get that, and that became that was me needing more. Right, the issue is not that she's incompetent or needy. It's not that she's not as able as the male associates. It's that her role is different. The reality of complementarianism is that men and women each need each other. Men need women in ministry. Women need men in ministry. If the women go missing, we lose the richness of complementarianism. We lose the wisdom that comes from having men and women in the room. But if the men go missing and the women don't want to overstep, then the women are really stuck. And so it looks like they need more. It's just more obvious, but actually we need one another. It's not a flaw and it shouldn't be viewed as one. The last thing on complementarianism, most of the explicit things that women said about complementarianism were about working it out together. In truth, we don't have hundreds of years of models of mixed gender teams to work out how to do this. At this point in history, a lot of women who are working in churches are the first woman in their role and they're working out what that looks like. And a lot of senior pastors are working with women and they haven't ever been in a church that's had women in it. So we're all making it up as we go along. We're flying and building the plane at the same time. And so the women are very positive about just having open conversations about that. How do we do things well? Let's try and think it through together. Let's try this thing. Let's review it. Let's never do that again. Let's try something else. Oh, that went well. Let's try that. You don't need to have it all sorted out. Good, open conversations were viewed very positively. Let me give you a couple of quotes again. So in terms of complementarianism, it was actually a great environment as a woman. Like, there was lots of discussion between both guys about how do we actually be complementarian rather than just say we're complementarian. So I was quite involved in decision making. We'd often go, have we pushed the boundaries too far? Have I done things that I'm uncomfortable with? Or things like that. You can see it there. They're working it out, and she's happy with that. You don't need to be sorted. She wants to work it out. Similarly, participant four, I think he hit a good balance between being formed in his theology on men and women working together in ministry, but also being open to keep working through what that looks like in practice and keep learning and growing in it in each unique context that actually came up. I think he was open to be creative about the expression of our complementarian theology in practice, right? Same idea. And then a related idea, let me come back to that silos versus working together thing that I quoted Cara on. I'll start our thinking, I'll give you another quote. Let me give you another quote to kick off our thinking. My advice to people going into a complementarian ministry is just to work out what people mean by that. Like to say, is it too distinct? We support ministry to women and women ministering to women, or are we actually trying to do that together? I think it's much easier to roster and organise when you do things separately, but to try and think creatively and intentionally about how do you express those partnerships, say in a Sunday service, it's easy for it to get overlooked. Not intentionally, but it's just hard to go, okay, how are we going to make sure that this... So there were times that I did combined sermons with the guys. So did one with an associate on Ephesians 5. The associate did the theological explanation of the passage, and then he invited me up and said, now we're going to think about the application, what this looks like in practice. And then we very intentionally both stayed at the microphone. He asked me questions, we interacted. Like, we knew what the questions were, but it was a conversation. There were times when we would have a panel, like more topical sermons, and it didn't necessarily just have to be on a very narrow range of subjects, but they would get me to be part of those panels as well. But all of those kinds of things need extra planning and extra communication. So just that intentionality. I think we're for it in theory, but it takes a lot of commitment to work out in practice and to make sure it doesn't get forgotten. She wasn't the only participant to talk about those kinds of things, doing a bit at the end of the sermon that came up several times. But I think her point is, if we want to work together in ways that really make the most of us being men and women, it's going to take time. It's going to require real intentionality. If you don't think about Sunday service till Tuesday, it's not going to happen, right? It just requires more lead time. It needs to be really deliberate. But as the women did talk about it, it was so rich. You could feel the richness of those moments where it was happening together. And it brings something really positive for the building up of the congregation. What is and isn't appropriate for them to do? Is that appropriate to do something at the end of the service or not? Let's just agree that we're all going to put those lines in different places. But a bit of creativity, sharing with each other what we've tried, how it went, I think can help us to express complementarianism better. All right, let's have a look at the diagram. That's all I have to say about complementarianism. Is it better to take the questions at the end, or?
Probably got a few at the moment. All right. Maybe just encourage people to pop questions.
Okay, if you have questions about that, you can have your 30 seconds, and then we'll come back to that. All right, let's talk about teams. If you look at the diagram, there's only one thing left that we haven't looked at. We're going to deal with that now. What we were talking about, this, so it's the box that says relationships with the team is what we haven't looked at. What we were looking at this morning, no, in the first session, the quality of the relationship between the woman and the senior pastor with whom she worked can be talked about in terms of a thing called leader-member exchange, or LMX. Sadly, there is no universal definition of LMX, and there are people who don't think it's an exchange relationship, and we don't care about that. But here's a couple of definitions that are close enough to give you a vibe for what leader-member exchange is. So Leiden and Maslin, there's four dimensions to leader-member exchange. Affect, loyalty, contribution, and professional respect. Sorry, I should say leader is another word for boss, Member is another word for the person under them, okay? So there's four dimensions to that relationship. Grain and Urbien, three dimensions. This is a very famous article on the... famous in small circles, to be sure. Famous article on this topic. So respect, trust and obligation. High LMX, high is good, high LMX relationships are mature partnership exchanges. They're so highly correlated that they can be tapped into with a single measure of LMX. They measure it with just a 7-point question, and one of the questions is, how effective is your working relationship with the leader? And then one of the bigger meta-analyses, so looking over a whole bunch of these articles and bringing it together, six dimensions: mutual support, trusting, liking, latitude, that's latitude in you, that you're given in your job, attention and loyalty. I hope from that you can see that's the kind of thing we were talking about this morning, right? That how is your relationship, and relationships having trust and loyalty, but also there's that professional thing, being able to make a contribution, getting support, having resources. It's the quality of your relationship with your boss. When that idea took off, leader-member exchange, in 1975, it had a different name, but the big breakthrough was the idea that leaders do not have an average leadership style. So up until then, you'd talked about leadership style. You don't actually have an average leadership style. What you have is individual relationships with the people who work under you. Now, you're your own personality. There'll be things you do that are the same and different, but you don't really have an average leadership style. What you end up with is, with the people under you, with some, you develop high LMX relationships, right? Good relationships. The boss and the member, you trust each other, you provide resources for each other, you go beyond the job description to get things done, that sort of thing. They're mature partnership relationships. On the other hand, you have low LMX relationships, which is where that doesn't happen. Most workplaces have a mix of high and low LMX relationships. And there are a range of reasons why you have high and low LMX relationships. So the original article speculates this, that the boss simply cannot devote the required time and energy to each and all of his members to ensure their optimum performance. Right? Now, that's not the whole thing, but it seems fairly likely that it's part of the issue. And I think when we think about churches, the church context, we need to appreciate that the senior pastor doesn't just develop leader-member type relationships with employees. He can also end up having to do it with key members of the church who are not on staff. And so, in other words, at some point, it is impossible for the senior pastor to develop high LMX relationships with everybody on team. Like, because he's human and limited and there's too many of them. So that's one of the reasons that you don't have high LMX relationships with everyone. All right, lock that away. Let's talk briefly about team member exchange. Here's our definition of team member exchange. Team member exchange assesses the... Team member exchange quality assesses the reciprocity between a member and his or her team with respect to the member's contribution of ideas, feedback and assistance to other members, and in turn the member's receipt of information, help and recognition from other team members. In other words, team member exchange is how good your relationship is, your working relationship is, with the members of your team. Not nearly as much work has been done on team member exchange. But there are two things, there are two reasons I'm telling you all of this that are interesting for us. The first is LMX and TMX have both been studied in terms of their relationship to a whole range of job outcomes. So team member exchange is linked to organisational citizenship behaviours, that's things like going beyond your job description to do stuff that's good for the organisation, job performance, organisational commitment, how committed you are to the organisation, sort of turnover intentions, job satisfaction, psychological well-being, and creativity. If you've got all those things going well, that's basically a positive workplace experience, okay? There's a really high overlap between things linked to team member exchange and things linked to leadership member exchange. And that brings us to our second point. There's more work to be done, But there's evidence that TMX can substitute or compensate high TMX for low LMX, for low leader member exchange. That strong relationships within the team can substitute over the same outcomes for low exchange with your boss. And if that's true, then one option for a senior pastor with a really big team is to deliberately foster good team relationships. And that will probably do the job. So instead of that partnership coming directly from the senior pastor, it can be substituted by partnership with the team. And once your team's a certain size, it's good to know that that's your option. It's worth saying that there's different types of low LMX relationships. So there's the one where the boss would love to just have time for everybody and doesn't. And then there's your really toxic relationship, right? They're really different things. What we're talking about here is the possibility of a boss saying, there are too many, I need to choose some people and have high LMX relationships and make sure I've organised team relationships for the others. It doesn't mean that the senior pastor won't do the things on that diagram. He just won't do them as much. So will he still value their contribution? Yeah, that doesn't require much of a relationship. He just won't do as much of it, right? He'll still occasionally say that was really good. He'll still show some value. He'll still show some personal concern. He'll still have time to listen if something urgent comes up. But it's not going to be the same quality and depth as what you might hope if you're just gunning for partnership with the senior pastor. I do want to say, though, if the senior pastor decides that he can't have high LMX relationships with everybody, I don't think that means he should just pick the blokes. He will benefit from having a high LMX relationship with at least one woman on team because he needs to keep hearing more of that female voice. So who you choose doesn't mean you always exclude the woman. In terms of the study, I think we could see this on a couple of occasions. They were essentially the same. So the relationship with the senior pastor wasn't fantastic. In these situations, it wasn't because the team was too big. It was actually just not a fantastic relationship. But it was okay, and the participant was able to function adequately because there was an associate. There was a particular associate with whom they worked really closely. They had a really good ministry partnership with that person, and so they were able to get on, do ministry, and all of those other things were sort of fulfilled in that other relationship that they had. And in some cases, the associate was also a bit of a buffer between the person and the senior pastor that sort of broke up that relationship a little bit. And then the associate left. And the senior pastor didn't change the way that he related to those participants and didn't make an arrangement for them to start working then closely with somebody else. And so now what you've got is an associate whose need for partnership isn't being met somewhere else, and it's not happening with the senior pastor, and they start to rub up against each other, and it doesn't work. So in terms of our theory, high TMX stopped substituting for low LMX. All we have left is low LMX, and then it falls apart. So that's both evidence that high TMX can work in churches and that the relationship with the senior pastor still matters. We need to keep an eye on both of them. So perhaps the biggest thing, if you're in a large team and you deliberately choose a high TMX strategy, is that you need to acknowledge that if one of them leaves, that's not just a workload issue. It's a partnership issue, a relationship issue, it's a massive change. You've been relying on that relationally because that's the strategy you've used to create partnerships. So if someone leaves, that requires your attention to the people who've stayed. The reality is we all need partnership relationships at work, and when that vanishes, it's going to massively and negatively affect our experience of the workplace. So if you come back to the diagram, you'll see a dotted line. Is there a diagram next? Yeah, there we go. You'll see a dotted line from the skills of the senior pastor to relationships in the team. Now, those relationships can be formed without the senior pastor's help, or worse, in spite of the senior pastor. But ideally, the senior pastor can choose to foster those relationships, right? You give people time. You give them space to develop them. They will not be developed exclusively through compulsory fun activities. We all have compulsory fun activities. I'm sure they have a role, but that's not what I'm talking about. That's not enough for the kind of relationships we're talking about. It's giving people things to work on together, getting them to work near each other a lot. So senior pastors can foster them by developing this sense of partnership through a different route. All right, that's TMX and LMX. The next one's not on your outline, but let me just say a little bit about role restructures. Because if you watch the video, you'll know that I mentioned role restructures. In some ways, this is another area where an accidental oops can be a bit of an issue for women on staff. Probably the women's worker is who I'm mostly talking about here. I can't work from participants' quotes without giving away the anonymity, because church restructures are pretty identifying. But let me explain the problem. No one starts a church restructure by thinking, what will we do with the women's worker? Right? So you think, are we choosing a 5M model or a congregational model? How many congregations? Where are the kids going to fit? All those big things going first, and that's okay. But the danger is, after you've worked that all out, and that's all somewhere on a whiteboard, and you look down at your list and you think, her. What are we going to do with her, right? And we sort of shove her in and tell her to do what she was doing before we did the restructure and just sort of make it work. Except she can't keep doing what she was just redoing because of your restructure. So you used to have 3 congregations, she could go to all of them, and now you have 4 and she can't, because that's insane. Or two of your congregations are on at the same time. That's going to thwart that as a plan, right? So she can't do that. Or she used to work closely with Bob and Bruce, but their roles have changed, and now they're divided between Bob and Bruce and Ken and Keith, and so she's got to coordinate with 4 people instead of 2 people. And that's a nightmare. And it's not just a nightmare because there's 4 of them, although that in itself is a nightmare, but it's because, see, Ken looks after retirees, and Keith looks after the youth. And so they never have to speak to each other. So they don't know that at 2 o'clock on Sunday, Ken wants her at a thing for retirees and Keith wants her at a thing for the youth, even though it's on at the same time. So her job has just become impossible because of the way that you've restructured. And so just like you realise that you've changed her TMX because she used to work closely with a couple of people, now it's divided across 4, none of them work particularly closely with her. So it's affected her TMX. It's also just affected the run-of-the-mill literal capacity to do the job, and it's all over the shop, and it's basically a dud. So there clearly isn't a single solution to that. All I want to say is that leaving her role the same and shoving her in and hoping it fits is not a solution. That's really the big idea that I want you to take away from that. You need to work with her to work out how her role's going to change in that new structure, what your new expectations are going to be, what she's going to drop, what she's going to pick up, whatever it might be. Whatever you come up with needs to be doable. And this is probably the place to say that I did hear some pretty insane job descriptions for women as I did these interviews. If you are at a large church and you've got 5 blokes on staff, can the woman look after what is probably 55% of your congregation? No, that's not, no, she can't. Like, you need, women's job descriptions could use a little bit of finessing, is what I would say. All right. Yes, that'll do. So that's sort of the 3 big areas that I wanted to cover in this one. So we've looked at complementarianism, at LMX and TMX, or teams, and then a little bit about role restructures. I imagine the questions will be a bit more complex this time around, so we might go to questions now. Yeah.